This is Ron. He's from Vancouver. I met him yesterday at... Yeah. Okay. I forgot to do that. Okay. I met him yesterday here, and it sounds like he has a good story, so I give you Ron.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Ron, and I'm an alcoholic. I guess I will stand. I'd like to welcome anybody new, anybody coming back. Welcome to AA. AA is live and well in Vancouver, Canada, and my sobriety date's November the 3rd, 1988, so I'll be coming up to 27 years this year. How it all started for me was I started drinking when I was 14, and I started a man's job when I was 14. I'm a longshoreman, so I work on the ports, and you have ports here, and I went down and visited them yesterday, and went down to their union hall down there yesterday. I think it's local 10, and I'm local 500. So I've been working on the docks when I was 14. So, you know, so I quit school. I became a longshoreman, and that's where my drinking started. So here's, you know, a 14-year-old working big ships and working cranes and bulldozers and front-end loaders, and I'm drinking. You know, so drinking was just an everyday thing for me. You know, just like pretty much anybody else. I drank, and I drank lots, and, you know, I can remember going to work many days and just being drunk. By the time I started sober, by the time I finished my shift, I was completely drunk. Because I had ships filled up with booze, right? These ships are filled with booze. The containers are filled with booze. And there's booze everywhere. And back then, I started the waterfront when I was like 14. So we're talking about like maybe 36, 37 years ago, I started. And back then, you know, everybody drank. It was just what we did back then. We drank. And it never stopped for me. It truly never stopped. You know, I just kept on drinking and just kept on drinking. And, you know, from 14 to 24 is I just couldn't handle it. I really couldn't. I was, by the time I was 24, I was driving huge machines like front end loaders. I was driving like bulldozers and I was driving them into the water. I was flipping them off the docks and into the water, and I was driving cranes and I was hitting things, and I was driving great big forklifts, and I was driving them through the ships and driving them through the docks, and I would be unloading like trucks of steel, and I would hit the very front, the exhaust part of it, and, you know, talking about the damage and talking about the chaos. My life was like this every single day. You know, I can remember working around lumber, and I'm working around lumber, and one night a foreman was looking for me. And I don't know where the heck I was, but I have somebody tapping my feet. And he said, "Hey, get up, what are you doing?" And I'm at work, and I passed out at work. And I said, like, "Where am I?" He says, "You're at work, you should be working." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So he says, I said, "How did you find me here?" And I was behind a bunch of loads of lumber, and it was like a maze. You had to go around a maze. And I was passed out on the dock, hidden in this maze. I said, "How did you find me?" He says, "Come on, get up, I'll show you." So we went around, and here's lumber right in front of me. And here's my bottle of vodka, and I had cups, and but there was no me, right? But he found my vodka, is what happened. So he said, "Just keep working, but, you know, just don't do that anymore." I said, "Yeah, okay." As you can see, it became a problem, and it was a huge problem in my life, you know. And I didn't know anything about AA, nothing. So anyways, it came to a point, November, I guess, 2nd or something, because my sobriety date is November the 3rd. November the 2nd, I was drinking, and I couldn't stop, and life was hell every day. I mean, it was hell. If you're a drunk, and if you're drinking, life's hell. And my life was hell every single day. Woke up, it was another day of hell. Wake up, another day of hell. And I phoned my union to ask for some help, and they got me some help. And some guy on the other end of the phone, he ended up turning out to be my sponsor. Not this one, Jorge's my sponsor now, but my very first sponsor. And he said something to me the very first day. He said something to me. He says, can you quit just for today? And I'm like, yeah, well, that's a stupid question. I said, anybody can quit for a day. Like, hey, can you quit for today? Sure. Right? Of course I can. I don't know about tomorrow or the next day. He said, don't even worry about it. If you can quit just for today, he says, I'll help you. And I don't know if you guys have detoxes here. He took me to detox. And as he's driving me to detox, you guys know what detox is? Anyways, it's a detox center where, you know. I thought I was going to Betty Ford Clinic. I asked him if there's tennis courts there on the way. He's taking me there. Is there tennis courts? No tennis courts. I says, is there a swimming pool? He says, no swimming pool. Oh, my Jesus, where am I going? I said, you know, I kept asking him a question. And it was no, no, no. So he's taking me to detox, and I hated detox. I completely hated detox. And if you haven't been there, it sucks. You go there, and you're not even allowed to smoke now in detox. But back then, you could. And I hated detox. And I was coming down off of alcohol and just alcohol. I did drugs too, but alcohol was my thing. Love drinking, love getting drunk, love puking. I could puke from here across the street. And then, and I knew if you could puke, you could drink more. And I'm like, perfect. I love that. And, you know, just to fall down walking loud drunk. And you think I'm loud sober, you should have seen me drunk. So I got some help, and I went to detox, and when I was there, they said, some counselor or something said to me that if you keep going the way you're going, you're going to kill yourself. And that kind of really scared me, because I didn't want to kill me, and I didn't want to kill anybody else. I was 24 years old. I didn't want to die. I really didn't want to die. I didn't know what was going on, but I didn't want to die. And he said, why don't you just hang out here for a week, you know, and we'll help you. So, and I did. So I stayed at the detox. And as people, when I was at detox, people were leaving and they're going somewhere. And they're going to an AA meeting, but I didn't know that. And then they would come back and they're all super happy, happy people at detox. And I'm dying. I'm dying. Like, I know what it feels like to die in the rooms of AA and to be new and not understanding. I was dying from this and I didn't even know it. Anyways, I ended up going to a meeting. And I went to my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I sat at the very back. And I didn't know nothing, but I heard this guy share. And, you know, this guy gave me hope. And, you know, to give an alcoholic hope is to give them the world. And that's what I was given. That night I was given something. And I was given the biggest gift in the world is I was given hope. That I don't have to ever, ever drink again in my life. And I didn't know that. No, I didn't hang out with people who didn't drink. Hang out with people who did drink. Not people who didn't drink. And I didn't have to live that way anymore. They told me that at the meetings. And I believed you guys. I seen your eyes. I sat in those chairs. And I couldn't believe it. That, you know, that I finally found somewhere in Alcoholics Anonymous that I always wanted in my entire life. And that was that hope. I fell in love with the meeting. It was 8:30 at night. I'll never forget it. And it was November the 3rd, I think. And I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I loved it so much, I hung out for the 11 o'clock meeting. So now there's 11 o'clock meeting. I fell in love with AA. And the guy who brought me there was my first sponsor. And, you know, what a perfect person to walk with me with this sobriety. You know, and my sponsor at that time, for the first 12 years, he was my sponsor. He was really involved with AA. It was service, everything. It was like, look, we're going to detox meetings. We're going to schools. We're going to jails. We're going to hospitals. We're going to volunteer at clubs like this, and we're going to paint walls, and we're going to set up meetings, and you're going to chair meetings. And, you know, this guy didn't tell me what to do. He walked with me. You know, what better off of learning Alcoholics Anonymous with somebody who just will walk with you? So that was my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. And within the very first few months, things weren't changing. I was still crazy. And people were talking. I heard people in the room saying, you know, you got to do the steps. You know, you got to have a sponsor. I had a sponsor. I wasn't doing the steps. So I heard the steps. And I'm like, okay. And they says, you need to sponsor people. I'm like, that's what I'm missing. Right? I'm 2 months sober. And I didn't even ask my sponsor because every meeting I went says you need a sponsor and you should be sponsoring people. I'm like, perfect, that's what I'm going to do. So I started sponsoring people in Alcoholics Anonymous at 2 months sober. And did I know the steps? Knew nothing about the steps. Nothing. And I started sponsoring people in the fellowship. And what happened to me is there's a couple of ways to change here. One is pain and the other one is to do the work. Right? So I ended up doing the work. And what happened was, is I started sponsoring people. And they'd say, like, hey, Ron, do you know how to do step one? I said, I'll get right back to you. Just give me a few days. I would, like, power read through the big book. Just go through the big book. Just, okay, and this is what you do. So I would give it to them. And I truly didn't know what I was doing. But, you know, I still have a lot of sponsees today. You know, from not from the day one, but pretty close. You know, with almost 20 years and stuff like this. And I got into the big book right away, so I'm one of these big book guys. I'm one of these people who talk about steps. And that's what changed my entire life. So, you know, as I went along, I studied the big book, kept studying the big book, and I tried every treatment center. You talk about the idiot's guide. You talk about every treatment center from here to Timbuktu. Did them all. And it was still confusing. So I sat in the rooms confused about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then I got a hold of Joe and Charlie. I don't know if anybody knows Joe and Charlie. Love them. But, you know, when it came to step four, they did things a little different. So if it comes to what you're telling me, or if it comes to what the big book's telling me, I'm going with what the big book says. So that's how my journey started. And I got it into these 12 steps. And, you know, I didn't realize about this obsession of the mind and this allergy, about the two symptoms that we have. I didn't know about them, but I learned about them once I started studying this big book. And, you know, it had a lot to do with step one, and I didn't know what the problem was. I didn't know that I have this obsession of the mind that lies to me. So this thinking, and our thinking is the main problem, tells me that on page 25. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body, page 25. So the main problem isn't drinking. And I didn't know that. I always thought drinking was the problem, but it's not. My mind got me to that drink. My mind wasn't working right. So drinking's not the problem, but it was my thinking. My thinking got me there every time. And it would say, it's okay, it's not okay. What should I do? And I would drink. But it wasn't the drink that's the problem. My thinking got me there. So the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. So the main problem was my thinking. And I didn't realize that. So once I actually took alcohol into my system, I would catch this allergy. And an allergy is an abnormal reaction to something. I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. But little did I know something happened before the allergy, before I even get thirsty. Even before the thinking, something happens before I even think about alcohol. And Dr. Silkworth talks about it, and it's that irritable, restless discontent. It's a spiritual malady, right? So I have a warning light. The warning light is my spiritual malady. It means I'm not spiritually okay. And if I'm not spiritually okay, I might go thinking that, you know what, I'm not okay inside. And you know what, I might, from the spiritual malady of being irritable, restless, discontent, I might want to maybe even think about drinking because of my girlfriend or because of my job or because people don't love me. And because the hole I have inside of me is because I feel so horrible inside. That's the spiritual malady. And I'm going to fix it. I'm going to drink. And I'm going to drink. I'm thinking about it. And then I drink. And it's just one vicious circle that keeps going around and around. And it's not going to stop unless you get some spiritual help. That's step one. Step one's really bad news. Step one is it tells us I'm unhappy. And I am unhappy. So if anybody's unhappy here, you're in the spiritual malady. You're actually in the problem. You're in your head. So let's forget about that. Because I don't even like talking about step one. Let's talk about the solution. Let's go to steps two and three, and it talks about being happy. And what's the solution? I've been in Hawaii. I've been in Mexico. I've been all over the world trying to find God. Where's God? Where's God? God, 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 God. Pray, God. Where's God? I just have to look in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and told me exactly where God is, not who. I'm not here to tell you who God is. I can't do that. But I can tell you where God is from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it tells me on page 25, it says, our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. So God's been within me the whole time in my heart. But my head's gotten in the way. How? And Dr. Silper talks about, like, look, you're not going to be able to tell the difference between the truth and the false. That's Bill's doctor. What's the difference between the truth and the false? The truth has always been within me in my heart. But so is the problem, the thinking. So how can my heart reach your heart if your mind's in the way? You can't. So we need to have an open mind. When I have an open mind, now my heart can reach your heart. And that's where I want you. I want to be able to reach your heart. Nothing else matters in this world other than my heart reaching your heart. That's it. That's all I want. That's step two. It's just tapping into that. On page 55, it says, deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. We all believe in something, but it's within us. I didn't know that. At the back of the big book, the gentleman yesterday shared about the spiritual experience. At the bottom of the page of spiritual experience, it says exactly this. It says, our members have tapped an unexpected inner resource, which they presently use as a power greater than themselves. So where's God in our hearts? I didn't know that. And step three, that's step two. Step three tells me I need to tap into this all the time. And it actually tells me I'm going to be happy. It tells me this. So if I'm happy, I'm living steps two and three. I'm actually in the solution. I go around, I put on seminars, like help a lot of people through the steps. And there's 50 people. The last time there was 50 of them. And I asked all of them if any of them have problems. And they all put up their hands. Then I said, ask me if I have any problems. And do I got any problems today?
Yes.
No. No. Because if I said yes, it means that I'm in the problem and I'm in my head. And absolutely not. I'm in the solution all day. That's where God wants me. God wants me not to be in my head ever. Until we get to step 11, right? And this is what I needed. I needed to stay in the solution. I needed to live in the solution, steps two and three, all the time. So now, just because you know about the problem, and just because you know about the solution, do you think you can stay sober the whole time? Answer is no. You can't. Because what happens is people cut us off in life. They cut in front of us. Girlfriends get mad at us. People don't do what we want. And that causes, like, resentment. And it causes defects of character. And those things there pull me away from God. Every day I'm getting pulled away from God because of my defects of character. Because of how I'm reacting to this. Not because of what you're doing. So I ended up doing a step four. And what I learned from step four is, it has nothing to do with you. So if you have actually any resentments in AA, you shouldn't. Because it has nothing to do with them. And I didn't know that. I didn't know a resentment has nothing to do with you, but it's how I react to that. And then I had to deal with my fears and the sex and the harms. I didn't know that, so I ended up doing that in step five. And then by the time I do step five, I know what my defects of characters are very crystal clear. They're right there. I know exactly which ones. There's no thinking about it. I know what I'm doing. And now we get to step six, and it says we're entirely ready, so we know which defects they are. So step six is thinking and knowing what defects are. Step seven is I'm acting out on them, and I don't want to act out on them anymore. So, you know, we say the step seven prayer, and we ask God to remove every single defect of character that stand in my way and my usefulness to you, God, and others. So what I'm doing is I'm doing the opposite. I'm praying, but I'm also doing some new actions so I don't have to live in my defects. I live in my in God's will instead of what I think and what I'm doing. That brings me to step seven. My step eight is done, and my step four. Step nine's huge. And when I get to step nine is the most important person in your life is you. And it's always about, you know, I've always reacted from what I think. I've always reacted from what I know. And it's not good. If you're going from where you think or what you know isn't good enough. This is all about me today, and it's about me reacting different and reacting from God's will today. Right? So I need to always react with love. I don't care what the situation is, because I always reacted from what I thought, or from being mean, or from being angry. So every situation, how do you make amends? How do you make amends to you? How do you forgive you from all the hurt that I've caused you over all these years? How do you forgive? And the only way to give you is to love you. And you need to love you first. You have to love you. But how do you do that? It's by reacting with love in everything I do today. I don't care what's said to me. I don't care what's done. I need to react with love. And it changes my whole entire life. And I make amends to me first. I do need to walk over the Golden Gate Bridge. I need to, you know, love others. I need to support others. I need this in my life every single day. Then I go to step 10, and a lot of people confuse step 10 with step 11, but step 10 is done all through the day. All through the day. Right? And there's five specific things. We get the four defects of characters. We pray. We tell somebody immediately. We make amends quickly. And we resolutely turn our thoughts how I can help others. They talk about love and tolerance as our code. Of others as our code. Right? That's step 10. Step 10 is done all through the day. Step 11 is where the prayers come in. Where in the morning it talks about on the awakening. We look at the next 24 hours ahead. We do that every morning. We pray every morning. We do that every morning. And at night we answer the 9 questions at night. And I believe those 9 questions at night when we retire at night go through all the steps. And we do that every single night. That's page 86 to 88. And then it brings us to step 12. And step 12, you know, is just amazing. And step 12 is, how can I help you today? Like, how can I help you? There's only one way over all these years I've learned to help you. And I thought it was loving you. But it's not. Me loving you isn't going to keep you sober. It's going to make things easy. It's going to make it comfortable. But you're not going to stay sober. And I want you sober. How do I help you? How is the maximum help that I can help you today? And it's by taking you through the 12 steps. That's the only way I can help you today. And give you a new and amazing life to look at you today. And to love you today. This is truly about loving you. I don't care how big you are. I don't care how small you are. I don't care what color you are. I don't care how old you are. How young you are. I want to help you. I want to walk with you. And I might be too loud, right? You can have my sponsor over here. He's a lot quieter, right? And, you know, but we have that same heart as I see through the rooms here. I know who you are. I can see right through you, and what I'm looking at is your heart. That love, that caring. And being that maximum helpfulness to others. And that brings us through all the 12 steps. And you know, I'm not here to preach. I'm just so passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous. I have from the time I walked in these rooms, I'm passionate even today. I wake up today and I'm in prayer. Right away. My eyes aren't even open and I'm in prayer. And I'm in prayer all through the day. And I'm in my heart. I'm always listening to my heart. I'm always reacting with love. And I'm here by my actions today. Your actions will tell me who you are. Is your positive, loving actions. And that's what I got from the 12 steps and from Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for my sobriety.